Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. According to a recent study conducted by Rutgers, despite 5 years of recovery, sustained job growth, and reductions in the number of unemployed workers, Americans are not convinced the economy is improving. 7 in 10 now say the recession's impact is permanent, up from half in 2009 when the recession officially ended. Just 40% of Americans believe their families' finances will get better over the next year. As we all try to make ends meet in our personal and business lives, we need to be smart as we work to preserve and build our wealth. The economy and the market has been extremely turbulent in recent history. With these conditions in front of us, how do we safely invest so we can protect our future? To help answer some of those questions, we are talking with Ryan Lundervold, who owns Lundervold Enterprises, a national financial investment and advising firm.
Hi, Ryan. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having me on the show.
I really wanted to talk to you because of your background in the finance world, but specifically, I guess your motto for your business, you correct me if I'm wrong, but it's not how much money you make, it's how much money you keep.
That's exactly right.
And I like that philosophy because with the turbulent world that we live in, it's difficult and people are worried about their retirement. They're worried about keeping their salary at a certain level. They're worried about losing their jobs. And it's kind of scary. So your philosophy on approaching finances is actually refreshing. It's not just about making just a ton of money, which is really quite unrealistic most of the time anyways. But
right.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. You know, my background is a little bit different than most. You know, my dad, he was a financial planner. He started in 1967, and he owned his own business, and he had done a number of different businesses outside of finance as well. And, you know, trying to learn from other people's mistakes and other people's successes is one of the things that he taught me when I was quite young. And so early on, understanding that, you know, if you go out and you can make $1 million in 1 year, that sounds great. But if it costs you or you spend $1.1 million, you didn't do so well. And so what we try to do here at my firm is try to let people understand and get people to understand that every time you make money and you have the ability to lock in those gains, that gives you more of a base than you would if you just continued to kind of ride the roller coaster. You don't need to make as much interest if you continue to lock in gains and move forward as you would if you had exposure to losses. And, you know, I guess in my world, I kind of relate that to the stock market. You know, you never know what tomorrow is going to bring. But unfortunately, the way the finance world is set up, especially for most retail investors, and when I say retail investors, I'm talking about, you know, individual people. The stock market is really their only option when it comes to retirement planning.
And
my firm, we try to give them more options and give them more exposure to say, you know, the stock market is great for some of your money, but we can also do some other things as well.
Well, I know when I met you, I was one of those pessimistic stock market people. I've been investing on my own for a while, and then we also have different firms that we've worked with in the past, which you're aware of now that you're doing my investments. And I have experience of investing in companies that have had growth all through the recession, 20% growth in 2009, you know, which is pretty much unheard of. And I watched this company go, their stock price devalue by 50% and not rise very fast or, you know, not come back as fast as others. And then I've watched other companies that have lost 50, 100 million a year just boom, and they've never made a profit. And I just realized pretty quickly that I'm not very good at this. I need to, well, first, first of all, I don't spend enough time analyzing every stock, so I realize I'm not in that realm. But I realized quickly that there has to be another way to go after preserving your wealth and gaining wealth. And you have a different perspective on this, which I really like. Can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah. You know, as time goes by, I try to be optimistic and say that the investments that are available to retail investors gets better and better. You know, even though with interest rates being low and you can't go to the bank and make money, there are options for individual investors with retirement assets. And with those retirement assets, you can purchase some investments out there that give you exposure to stock market type returns. Maybe they might be capped as to how much return you can get, or they might have a spread on it. And when I say a spread, that means, you know, you might not be able to participate with 100% of the market growth, but they might say you can participate with 97% of it or something along that line. Those types of investments are what I'm referring to when I say it's not how much money you make, it's how much money you keep. And a lot of the times when working with individuals, whether they're interested in using their IRAs or 401ks, we can move their assets into these types of investments and give them 100% security.
And that to me was what was so fascinating, and what I really wanted to do for my family is get ourselves into something where you can have the upside of the market, but you're protected from the downside. And how does that work? I mean, how can you realistic? It almost sounds like fantasy, right? How can you realistically take advantage of all the ups but none of the losses?
Well, there's two different ways that we approach that. And one way is to purchase what is called a fixed indexed annuity. And that's an insurance product. And in years past, an insurance product called an annuity was an agreement with a insurance company that you would hand over some money to them. And in return, they would give you a guaranteed income stream for the rest of your life. The problem with that is flexibility and your loss of money management. Once you give the insurance company the money is then the insurance company's. Well, things have gotten better, and the availability of these insurance products called a fixed index annuity, they've offered a lot more flexibility. And so you can enter into a agreement or a contract with the insurance company and have a specific end date. You know, whether that end date is going to be 5 years, 7 years, or 10 years, or longer, those different products are what the individual and myself would like to determine, you know, what is in their risk tolerance and how long are they able to keep the money in there.
So you have a lot more. You have a lot more flexibility with those things, and I mean, without getting into all the details of it, you know, investment advisors have, you see it on the media and stuff all the time, that the index funds, if you just go with the index or just follow the market, you are going to beat out the average, these fund managers most of the time. Fund managers usually can't beat the market. So you're essentially doing a blend of following the market plus not taking the losses. So you're
correct.
It's really great. So let's touch a little bit on some other aspects and then get back to that. You know, what's going on in the world today and some of the issues. I have a national study from Rutgers where they say that 7 in 10 people in the United States are pretty pessimistic about their future and about what's going on today. The majority say that they are making less now than they did 5 years ago when the recession started. Actually, I got to correct that. It's roughly 4 in 5 Americans have little, or I'm sorry, 4 in 10 Americans hold that view, that they have less opportunity than they did 5 years ago. And roughly 4 in 5 Americans have little or no confidence in the government to do anything about it. What are your thoughts on some of that? Where are we headed as a country? And do you see the economy coming back?
Well, one of the things in terms of the economy and versus the stock market, people don't realize, has virtually gone straight up since 2009. But now the government has had a hand in that, and it's very hard to determine how much the Federal Reserve has had a hand in the in the stock market going up. But you'd have to assume that it's it's helped out quite a bit.
Well, the Federal Reserve has been printing a lot of money, and that had to have increased the stock market and also inflation, right?
Correct. Well, and we haven't really seen a lot of inflation yet, and I say yet because, you know, it has to come at some point.
Well, jobs haven't come back yet, so people don't have the spending money to
exactly
for corporations.
And, you know, the other problem that we're seeing, too, is the expansion of, you know, what they call the super wealthy has gotten larger and larger, and the middle class has gotten smaller and smaller. So middle class is being pinched in both ways in terms of, you know, they're the heavily taxed income group. The wealthy, they don't pay their fair share in taxes. And then, you know, most of the people in this country actually pay no tax as well. So the taxes being taken from the middle income earners hurts them the most. And they're the ones that need to continue to get out there and be buying and purchasing these the commodities that are offered at all the mom and pop shops that keep this economy going.
Well, because roughly 70% of the economy is going because of consumer spending. Not
correct.
Because of whatever you would think. It's because of large corporation purchases, but it's not. It's consumer spending.
It's not. That's correct.
And so unless jobs come back, it's going to be hard.
Well, and the other thing, too, is when times get rough, companies get skinny. And we've got some issues with a lot of the large corporations that make even Minnesota a great state to live in. They're trying to move. And, you know, when you look at the medical device and the pharmaceutical companies, you know, a lot of them call Ireland home.
Oh,
and when
yeah.
they make money over there, they don't bring it back.
Well,
and that's a real problem.
They want to get out of areas where the taxes are high, right?
Correct.
And
correct.
I know running my company, I got advertisements from different states advertising their low corporate taxes and things that you can do to get around taxes. So their bottom yep. line is what they're looking for. I mean,
correct.
It's just that
well,
basic.
Well, that's their job.
Yeah.
That is their job. Their job is to, and when you're on a board of directors, your job is to try to make that company as most profit as possible to be able to give back to shareholders in the form of stock.
So until we...
And stock valuation.
Until we solve the world problems and we change what their jobs are as far as being corporate citizens to the community, it's not going to change, right? Because their job is to make money for their company. So
correct.
I got to touch on the dollar because the alternative media is talking about how the dollar is going to collapse and how scary the world is. And when the dollar collapses, it might collapse because of hyperinflation because the Federal Reserve is printing so much money, and then there's a collapse like the like in Germany in the 1920s. What do you think about that?
You know, we live in a global economy, and there are so many different economies that rely on the dollar and the strength of the dollar. I have a hard time believing that the dollar, I'm going to be pretty optimistic here in saying that. I have a hard time believing that anything terrible in terms of the dollar going away is going to happen. There are so many countries that rely on the dollar and actually own a lot of our debt. So if we go down, they go down. And, you know, one of the largest ones that people may or may not know is China. And China, you know, they're keeping their communist government going, but they have the communist government is artificially keeping their currency down because they want to be able to have good trades with our dollar and our currency. So bottom line,
if China decides to debase our currency, they're hurting themselves. And so how can they go about doing that? Now, Russia, on the other hand, they're dependent on China. They do a lot of trade with China. So if they take down China, what do they do to themselves? So I guess it's a kind of a quadrant. What do you call that? It's a problem.
A conundrum?
Conundrum. That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah. And the thing is you never know what Russia's a wild card. You know, it's like, they have a gun pointed at us and we have a gun pointed at them. Maybe they don't care if they get shot or not. And that's that's even what the Cold War was all about. You know, do they care more about themselves or do they care more about seeing us fail?
Well,
we were kind of back in that same situation. So that, the Russia thing, that could be the biggest impact as to how the dollar is perceived.
Getting back to that point, if Russia doesn't care, there's other countries too. The Middle East, they don't care. Russia doesn't care. Some of the South American countries, they might really think that long term we're better off if we fail and they can rebuild without the U.S. dollar than to worry about that interrelationship. Now, China, on the other hand, I would think wouldn't be going there because they don't want they want to preserve their situation, whereas a lot of other countries, which is probably a good chunk of the world, would rather see us just start over.
You know, I would not agree with you in saying that the good chunk of the world would rather see us start over. Everybody has had, and when I say everybody, other countries have had their trials and tribulations. You know, you look at the issues with Greece, and you look at a lot of the other European countries, and the European Union in itself, they all have had a lot of issues. But I still think that there's strength in numbers when it comes to currency. And, you know, the currencies right now that are the strongest are obviously the pound. That's been a very strong currency. And, you know, the European United Nations, the euro is, they've had their trials and tribulations as well, but that euro is still a very strong currency. So as long as we're all tied together, I think it's very difficult for these other countries to, per se, take down the dollar.
It's just too strong based on the interrelationships that we have.
Correct. That's where I was going with that.
Well, then the other question is gold. You know, all the alternative media talks about how investment in gold is really where you need to be to hedge your bet against the fall of the dollar. And in all of my research and my experience, gold really, I mean, let's face it, gold has been manipulated. There's so much facts out there that are proof out there showing that gold has been manipulated for the last 100 years. And do you really believe that gold could be a good investment knowing that it's so highly manipulated?
No. I believe one of the few people that actually come out and say, I do not believe that gold is a good investment in terms of trying to hedge your bet against the dollar. You already hit on the manipulation factor. The other issue that I have is, let's say you buy a brick of gold and you put it into your safe at home, or you keep it in your safety deposit box or wherever you want to keep it, and the dollar goes away. That brick of gold is no more, it has no worth to me as a business owner or as a consumer. If I want to go to Cub Foods or Barley's or Kowalski's and go get a loaf of bread, I'm not going to be able to take a chunk of my gold and go in there and say, can I trade you? That's not a good option in terms of that scare tactic. Gold, I think, is one of the rare, or not rare, but one of the investments out there that they utilize scare tactics to be able to drive prices either up or down.
And I could see that, because that's it works.
It still does continue to work.
Well, let's face it, if the dollar completely collapses, which we've already talked about, that would be challenging, then gold in pieces, small pieces, would be a good trading, something to barter. So in that way, I can see how they can argue that gold's a good investment. And, you know, they also saying that gold will go up to over 6,000 an ounce and things like that. But I haven't seen that. I think with the manipulation, they're just not going to let it go anywhere. And it really hasn't rose with inflation. The stock market rises with inflation a heck of a lot better than gold does, in my experience and even my research over the last 100 years.
And that's true. And gold is, it's either a boom or in a drought. It rarely seems like there's any flattening of the gold. I guess what I'm trying to say is that with gold, it doesn't seem like it's never not volatile. It's always, is gold going to go way up or is gold going to go way down? It doesn't seem like it's a very consistent investment as of late. You know, the last 15 years, it's gone straight up. So gold has become very expensive. And, you know, unfortunately, when it comes to retail investors, they tend to look at things when they go straight up, then they say, okay, now I want to buy it. And when actually that's not what you should be doing.
Well, as the market raised over the last 5 years, gold stayed more or less flat.
Right. But I'm talking about over the last 15 years.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And, you know, the stock market over from 2001 to 2011, they call that the lost decade. That's about as flat as it can be, you know, even though there's a lot of volatility in it. You know, that took 10 years for it to get back to 2001 levels. So, in terms of, is gold going to be a good investment, or are you buying gold for safety play? Those are two different things. Investments are things that you purchase because you believe the value will go up. A safety play is to say, this is going to be part of a diversified portfolio to make sure that if things go down, I at least have something to make sure that I still have something in my hands.
Well, I got to talk about this too, and I know I've brought this up to you in the past, but MIT did a study that based on our current financial situation as a country and based on how fast we're printing money and how fast our debt is increasing, that there will be an imminent collapse of our economy by the year, I think they said 2031. I don't have the year in front of me, but that's what I'm remembering.
I think it was like 2033. I think off the top of my head, I think you said it was 2033.
Okay, so what do you think about that? Because they're pretty smart people there at MIT, and I would think they have some point there. I mean, you can't have debt and you can't have continual printing of the dollar without at some point the system will collapse.
You know, you can't just continue to borrow from your neighbors and borrow from yourself and think that you're going to have longevity. It's obviously not a good financial plan. But you know, when I'm looking at our neighbors and looking across over at Europe, a lot of the other countries have had to do the same thing. Over time, countries fail because they have too many debts and they owe other people money. And we're kind of getting in that same situation, but we are a strong country still, and we have to look at the optimistic approach of saying we have to put some things into place with our government. And, you know, I know a lot of people don't believe that our government has the ability to do this, but giving ourselves the opportunity to put in some growth factors, like having our corporations come back to the United States and bringing their money back in. And maybe if we had something like a tax holiday where these companies or corporations can bring back their cash, get it going here in the United States, we could be in a really good situation. So, unfortunately, I'm leaving it up to politics to be able to let that happen.
But do you really believe these corporations are going to want to come back? I mean, unless they see themselves as a United States corporation, I mean, once you go to other countries, you start hiring people in other countries, do they see themselves as a U.S. company, or do they see themselves as more of a global citizen?
Well, you know, and that's going to be from a corporation-to-corporation point of view, but what I think is that 3M, yes, they believe they're a Minnesota company. They believe that they're a United States company. Ecolab, General Mills, Medtronic just moved over to Ireland, but they're not putting a lot of employees over there. They still believe that here is the economy that they want to see continue to move forward. And, you know, a lot of the times the people that are running those companies, they live and they are our neighbors. They're here. They're around here. And so why wouldn't you want to be able to try to grow and prosper right here in your front yard instead of going across the pond doing other things over there? Granted, you know, they still want to see global growth. That's the way, and going back to how corporations tend to operate, you know, they're trying to make sure that they make as much money as they can, keep it, and then give it back to stockholders in the form of dividends and valuation.
But I think there's, with the way the economy happened and the Great Recession, there really is a surge in people's belief in building a strong America and building it strong at home and having better leaders and better corporate citizens. I know, and I think you've seen this too, for many years it was all just about how do I make a buck. And I got to say, on Wall Street it still is that way. But yeah. I think a lot of business people are starting to look internally and saying, hey, let's be good corporate citizens and let's make our place that we live good. But I'm a little pessimistic in the sense that I don't think it's a large enough percentage of the people out there that feel that way.
Well, unfortunately, in that scenario, you know, the small percentage of people can ruin it for a large body of people. And what I'm talking about is, you know, you have like the Bernie Madoffs and the people with these Ponzi schemes. You know, those are, I call them the small percentage of people doing the wrong thing, but it makes it appear that it is a much bigger problem. And it really isn't. I think most of us are still trying to do the right thing and have our economy move forward and all of us prosper together. And, you know, as long as we can stick together and continue to do that, you know, the American way, I think we'll be okay.
Yeah, I would agree. I think there could be some failures before it gets better. I guess I'm a little more pessimistic on that.
Yeah,
but,
one,
you know,
take a step back to, you know, go 2 steps forward type of deal.
Well, sometimes you have to feel some pain in order for people to actually do something different. But, okay, I'm going to talk a little bit about hedging your bet against inflation. And I've come to the conclusion that one of the best places to hedge your bet against inflation really is the stock market. And let's face it, you can't store dollars in your mattress in a bank account.
No, that's the best way to lose money.
Well, and one of the biggest things you got to worry about is simply just inflation. How do I keep up with inflation? And you know, going back to these annuity funds that you're talking about, that to me seems like the best way to take advantage of the rise of inflation, any gains that the market may have, and still eliminate your risk of the downside. Because the downside is what's so scary to so many people. They've been hit twice in the last 10 years or 15 years, and people have just been nailed by the stock market. And so people are scared. And I think these annuity products that you're talking about really is a great option for people that want to protect their long-term investments and not be scared by the downfalls and the turbulence of the market.
That's correct. The nice thing about the annuity, again, is that when you put your money into the product, you have a guarantee that your money will never go backwards. And that guarantee is offered through the issuing insurance company. But the nice thing is, as well, whatever state that you purchase that annuity in, every insurance company has to put some money into a state insolvency fund. So even if that insurance company goes insolvent and is unable to pay their creditors and pay their bills and pay their interest to policyholders, the state that you purchased it in might be able to come in and be able to make your investment whole again. But even in the case of, you know, larger scales, larger insurance companies, you know, the federal government has come out and bailed out some large insurance companies in the past. Now, I'm not saying that that's a good plan, but I'm saying that is also an availability. So when you're buying these insurance products, you're not only having the ability to grow your asset and retain your interest, but you're also buying these insurance products that are backed by, you know, the states that you do the business in.
Well,
that's really nice.
And also, are these insurance companies very well diversified in different, different dollars and euros and different monetary backing, so that it's safer?
Yes, and you know, that's the job for me when I sit down with my clients or potential clients. They're people just looking for information. To be able to give them good companies that have maybe some global exposure. So even if the United States is not doing that well, maybe the company that you're doing business with, they've got a backing over in Europe or maybe a backing in India or something along that line. There are insurance companies here in the United States that have that global outreach and that pulse of the global market. So it's very nice to be able to partner with insurance companies like that.
Can companies allow this for their employees? Can they have a service offering for their employees?
Unfortunately, that is one of the things that I know the insurance companies have been working on. You can purchase a variable annuity through your employer-sponsored plan sometimes, but I'm not a big advocate of variable annuities. The main reason why is because of fees. Again, it goes back to it's not how much money you make, it's how much money you keep. And most of the time with a variable annuity, there can be some pretty heavy fees that you're starting off at, you know, with between 2% and 4% with a fee. That's kind of where we're at right now with inflation. So if I'm starting off at negative 2% or 4% because of fees, and then you're looking trying to keep up with inflation, you got to make 8% just to break even.
So you won't. You won't.
Well, you can, but you don't necessarily. You don't have any guarantees that that's going to happen.
So what? What is the best way for people to do this? Are they stuck? How do they do it?
Sometimes they are stuck, and I wish I had a solution for everybody. But you know, there are other options as well. When you look at using money that you have for retirement, let's say that you might work for 3M. You might work for Ecolab. The nice thing is when you work for a large corporation, you can go to your human resources department and you can ask them, hey, what is the availability of my 401k allowing me to do a in-service, non-hardship withdrawal? What that is that the federal government, back in 2000, when people were starting to lose some money in their 401ks, change their philosophy in terms of 401k planning. 401ks don't offer a lot of options in terms of protection. So they said, we will allow people to continue to work at their employer and take money out of their 401k and move it into an IRA. And an IRA is an acronym for Individual Retirement Account. As long as you move it directly from the 401k to the IRA, you will not get penalized, or you won't get taxed. So by doing these non-hardship in-service withdrawals, you can purchase this fixed indexed annuity through your IRA, and that's how you get your protection.
Okay, so you essentially, if your company allows it, you pull it out of your 401k, transfer it into an IRA, talk to someone like you, and you help them get into these funds.
Correct. That is correct. And I recommend the annuities for IRA purchases, but a lot of the times, because of people's age and the restrictions on annuities, if you have to or if you cannot use money from your retirement plan and you want to have a hedge against downside risk, then I would probably say that we would be candidates to use a covered call option. And most of the time, the last 30 years, options have been really only earmarked for sophisticated investors. They can be quite complicated, but we have a strategy now using ETFs. ETFs, the acronym for exchange-traded funds. We can utilize ETFs, and we can use this covered call strategy to ensure some downside protection, again, with upside risk. So, upside potential.
Are these essentially derivatives?
They can be.
What are your thoughts on the derivative market being so exposed?
Derivative market should not, in my opinion, for unsophisticated investors, for people that are retail investors, for people that are not following the stock market and don't have a lot of knowledge of it, derivatives are not the play for them. It can be too complicated and it can be moved too quickly by institutional investors and institutional players. So derivatives, 99% of the time when I'm meeting with individuals who are looking just for retirement planning, we don't even talk about derivatives.
Okay, so it's a whole other topic for another day. So, okay, well, how can people get a hold of you?
They can contact me through telephone, obviously. My number is 651-209-1906. That's our office. And you can talk to any of my staff, and we can set up an appointment. You can also email us at ryan@lundervoldfinancial.com.
Okay. Well, good. I will put that up for people to be able to, you know, on our page as well, so people can access that. Because this stuff gets pretty complicated, and I think the best way is just to talk to you directly about some of these things and figure out how people can preserve their wealth and not be worried about the stock market turbulence, which, let's face it, if the stock market has climbed so fast in the last 5 years, it can't keep climbing that fast. It has to have a correction pretty soon. So that's my pessimism here. It always has. It always corrected. It has to come at some point. So.
Well, I agree. And the thing is, even if you don't want to go into a fixed index annuity, what you need to continue to do is to diversify your portfolio. And you have to continue to, when you have good investments that have made you money, you have to take off some of the gains at some point and put it in somewhere else. And, you know, one of the things that my dad told me a long time ago as well, he said, you know, if everybody else is doing it in terms of investments, you're probably better off doing the opposite. And that's actually been very true. You know, everybody during the real estate boom, people refinancing, doing their things, a lot of people got into a lot of issues. If you were doing the stock market at that time, you were buying cheap, and, you know, you have to really have some help in learning how to diversify a portfolio.
Yeah, you don't want to follow the crowd. You need to look and see what you utilize what the crowd's doing to your advantage, though. I mean, that's the smart. You watch what the crowd's doing to help you navigate, because you don't follow them. You do kind of the opposite.
Yep, exactly.
So,
exactly.
Well, Ryan, thank you so much for talking to me today. And for anybody who's interested in reaching out to you, I'll make sure that your information is on the page for this show.
Yep, and my website is lundergoldfinancial.com, so you can learn a little about me and my staff, and there's some other things on there as well. One other thing I'd like to mention is for people here in Minnesota, I do give Social Security seminars, and I will be giving two dates in September and two dates in October at Woodbury Central Park. And so if people want some information on that, they can definitely contact our office.
Okay, that sounds great. Thank you so much, Ryan.
Okay, thanks, Sarah.
Okay, have a great day. Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye now.
Bye.
Despite the challenges we face with the current economy, Mr. Lundervold has shared with us some smart strategies for safeguarding and building our wealth. Specifically, look for investments that take advantage of the market upside while eliminating the risk of the downside. These investments typically outperform mutual funds, index funds, and other forms of investments over time because they remove the downside losses. However, it is imperative that you avoid high fees that will cut into your earnings over time. Otherwise, you will not realize a meaningful gain. Most annuities and employer-sponsored investments do not offer these options. You must choose wisely what investments to use that do offer these benefits. Remember, if your employer does not offer these options, you do have the ability to roll your 401k over to an IRA. For more details and strategies for safeguarding your wealth, you can contact Mr. Lundervold's firm directly. His contact information is found on this show's webpage. That's it for now. Have a wonderful day.